Welcome everyone to the Screamcast, last episode of 2014, baby. Oh yeah. With me right now is Brad Henderson. Brian Sauer is having an extension cord problem. He will be joining us shortly.
I didn't even get to say hello.
Oh. I'm a jerk. Sorry about that, Brad. We'll have to get
in. At least you took that crown from me. At least I'm not the asshole anymore. Probably still am the asshole.
Well, I'm the one putting the Christmas music underneath them, us talking, so I'm the asshole.
Well, that was my idea, though. That's the funny part.
Anyway,
how much I dislike Christmas music, I thought it would have been a good idea. And the response has been good, but whatever.
Yeah, there's one person sitting in his Grinch cave who didn't like it. And let us know, I tell you. Okay. Enough of that stuff. While we're waiting for Brian to join, we got a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about the new.
We have three movies. This is a landmark.
Yeah.
For us.
Whew, good lord. We're doing the double feature from Scream Factory: Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, and then we're going to dive into an early Helen Hunt flick, Trancers, a romantic comedy.
There's a lot more romance and action in this movie, by the way.
It's fantastic. So before we dive into all that, and while we're waiting for Brian to sort out his shit, let's go ahead and dive into the Blu-ray announcements.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
It's a quick one.
We're nearing the end of the year, so...
Yeah, for... Arrow announced on March 17th, Mark of the Devil will be coming out. They're unleashing the first like five titles, I guess.
Cool.
For next year, which will be nice to so you don't have to pay that ship. Well, actually, didn't Arrow do
it's
free
not
shipping?
Bad, man.
If you order
so the only
I think
hurdle
it's like
with
three,
Arrow
like 3 pounds or something like that.
Yeah, the only hurdle with Arrow is the region locking, and I bought a region two player or a region free player, so. You know,
yeah,
doesn't really worry anymore. But I'm glad they're doing U.S. stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then the only other one is on. I'm getting word on March 31st. I guess Blue Underground's going to be doing like a Fulci pack and an Argento pack. Don't cheer yet because it's just basically what they've already released in kind of like a three movie pack.
Okay.
And it's just stuff that's it's nothing new. So, I mean, if you haven't picked up the old titles, maybe this might be cheaper to do. So we'll see. And That's pretty much it. Other than Tusk comes out on December 30th. But we won't talk about Tusk.
Hey, man, it's getting, mixed reviews. I'm excited to check it out. So
yeah, I saw that Barbara Crampton said she liked it, which was... Which, doesn't really,
It's a hit or miss movie, I think.
Yeah, it's just
divisive, so,
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's the Blu-ray announcements.
Nice.
And nothing too much on VOD at the moment. And plus, we're trying to keep this episode shorter because we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about Helen Hunt.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's bring Brian in. See if we can see if this will work here. Brian, are you there? Brian, can you hear me? What is that noise?
What is that?
Let's try this again.
No,
hey.
Sound. There we go.
Hey.
All right.
I don't know what that was about. Pod people or shit coming through your.
Some weird sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's okay.
It's okay.
We thought you were getting abducted.
All right. Well, we just
did
the
best episode ever. Bad news for you. But...
Yeah. At least we can write a script and make some money.
Nice.
Based on a true story.
Or podcasting.
Nope.
All right, well, we just got done doing the Blu-ray announcements. They were short and sweet, so...
Oh, sweet.
So I took a sip of my coffee shop of horrors. coffee this morning.
Maybe if you just say it and you don't have to talk all sexual and shit.
Oh, drinking my Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee. Get their shit from coffeeshopofhorrors.com.
Okay. All right, so let's get on.
Yeah, there's nothing. Show. Yeah, whatever. That was my horrible plug for the day.
Let's, we were trying to. Whoa, I'm talking here.
Hey, who's the host here? Who's the host? Just kidding. Go for it, Brett.
Thought I was a co-host, but whatever. we are covering Christmas horror films this month, and we kind of threw Tales from the Crypt in there because of the segment All Through the House. Which is not, I mean, this Tales from the Crypt isn't a Christmas film, but we're really stretching here for Christmas movies this month, because we don't want to, you know, count a bunch of old back titles. I thought it was pushing it with Silent Night, Deadly Night. But, yeah, so Tales from the Crypt.
The Crypt. Death lives.
Who's next? Perhaps you?
Death lives. Tales from the Crypt, rated PG.
Would you guys, this first time for you guys, or?
Yeah, first time, and you know, it's funny, when this was released, I was only familiar with Tales from the Crypt because of the TV show, and didn't they do like some sort of produced type of Tales from the Crypt movies?
Yeah, they did three, actually. Yeah.
So I wasn't familiar with the original. I had thought it started as a TV show. So this is the first time for me watching it, and I had a blast. I thought it was fantastic. It's very, you know, I love these anthology flicks and the way they did it, you know, with kind of the connecting, you know, story or whatever.
They introduced the wraparound early.
Yeah, and I thought it worked, and I thought it was good. You know, it wasn't too shocking. Wasn't trying to be too shocking or anything like that. It was just, you know, a handful of really kind of fun and different stories, and that's all I'll say so far. There's one thing I want to talk about in particular, but I'll go to Brian here.
Yeah, no, I think I'd seen All Through the House, but I don't remember seeing the other segments in any of the other movies. You know, they're fun. It's a fun British anthology set, you know, just the two of them together. They're nice companion pieces. So I dug them.
Are we doing both, or are we just doing Tales right now?
I think we should do both, because they all fall in to one. I mean, a long series of anthology films that Amicus Productions released. This was, I think, like the fifth in the series, and Vault of Horror was the sixth. And I think From Beyond the Grave was the last one, which was seven. But, they had Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, From Beyond the Grave, The House That Dripped Blood, Asylum, Torture Garden, and The House of Horrors. Okay. And they all kind of have like that same feel. I mean, they were just dishing out like every seemed like almost every year they were putting out one of these things. But I've seen, the only one I haven't seen is The House of Horrors. I've seen everything else. I saw Tales from the Crypt way back in the day when like Fox released that Fox Selections. You guys remember that? They had like the burgundy banner up top, and it was the Skull Rider in one of the segments. It was like that was the front cover, And ooh. I thought it was getting like a Psychomania movie when I was younger, but it wasn't anything like Psychomania. But anyways, yeah, this is I've seen it before. It was nice to revisit because I haven't seen it in a long, long time. I honestly, this is almost like it feels like a first time for me because I think I saw it when I was very, very young, and it didn't grab me like other films do. And I guess I was looking more for bloodshed and bloodshed and horror aspect, not film, like good quality filmmaking, I guess you would say, because like this is shot well. It looks really good. The segments are well pieced together. Yeah, a couple of them are kind of funky, but between Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, I mean, there's some legitimately like good segments in these movies, and they're well done.
Yeah. So, what were you guys' favorite? Let's start with Tales from the Crypt, then we'll move. We'll go around, then we'll move to Vault of Horror. But let's go ahead and talk about our favorite segments on these. Brad, do you have a couple segments from Tales from the Crypt that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, I've always been a big fan of All Through the House, yeah. And same thing with the TV show that was the very first episode that was put on there. I mean, I think everything was decent in this one, but I think it was. I think Tales from the Crypt, a lot of the segments are a lot more horrific than Vault of Horror. It seems Vault of Horror is a little more laid back. This one, there's something that's always happening. And I thought the Reflection of Death one was that's the one where the guy is like it's like a POV sometimes. Yeah. And I thought that was well done because that was kind of you didn't know where they were going with that one at first. So I dug that one quite a bit too.
Cool. How about you, Brian?
Yeah, I think All Through the House is pretty great. It's kind of a tough thing to start the movie with that one. Because it is so strong.
Yeah.
But I thought the what was the one with Peter Cushing called? I'm just looking here at the different pieces. Let's see here.
That was
Poetic Justice.
Yeah, Poetic Justice.
Yeah. I you know what? I liked it, but when I was watching it, I was thinking, this is like one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Because, I mean, obviously the setup is just that there's some rich, asshole and his dad, and they live in this certain neighborhood, and the rubbish collector, played by Peter Cushing in one of his most pathetic roles, but like really affecting roles, is not liked by them, basically. And so they just plot different ways to fuck with him, and it's just really, really sad. For me anyway, but I liked it, it was like really neat to see Cushing play that kind of a role, because I hadn't seen too many like that, and he played it really well and made it very affecting. And so I don't know, I liked that one for some reason.
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen him more in a role like that. I really liked it. The two standouts for me, I think, were, I mean, we keep seeing it All Through the House, kind of just, I mean, it's a bit terrifying, the whole killer Santa Claus thing. And I think this one, I think out of all the killer Santa Claus we've seen, this one's definitely, the creep factor's up there. It's really well handled. And I can only imagine what people thought when they first saw that segment, back in 72, and it definitely made a mark, I really wanted to talk about the Reflection of Death, because I jotted down on my notes here, I'm like, was this the first kind of full-on, I think the whole thing, once the accident happens, it's pretty much POV. And I wanted to ask you, Brad, since you've seen a lot of first person horror and stuff like that. Like, was this one of the first ones that did this, or was there any that came before this? Because I don't think I've seen anything this old that did a full on POV.
The POV like killer, or just a POV in general?
They did. I mean, they did Halloween did the POV killer every now and then, but I mean nothing like this. You know what I mean? I think this lasted longer than anything I'd seen before.
Brian, you could probably back me up on this. Doesn't Peeping Tom have a lot of POV? And that was like one of the very first like slashers.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about horror, then I guess maybe Peeping Tom. But I mean, there's, you know, like Lady in the Lake, and you know, some 40s and 50s movies that
things I haven't seen.
Dark Passage has a long segment like that, I think, if I'm remembering. Yeah, so it's not, but maybe horror wise,
like, I don't really the POV really doesn't stand out to me, so I'm having a hard time like trying to recollect of what films have done it. But yeah, I mean, I highly doubt that this would be close to the first one to do it. I mean, that's a I'm trying to think, but Brian, you just named a few.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but it's still interesting, and as far as horror movies go, that I don't know. I'm not sure about.
I mean, I wasn't surprised. I knew, you know, I knew what was up. We've seen enough horror movies by now, you know, I knew what was up. It wasn't shocking to me. You know, but that's only the only downfall of that segment. I think we all saw it coming. I thought it was well done. I liked it. You know.
Well, and speaking of seeing it coming, Blind Alleys was probably my least favorite of the. That's the last one with the Home for the Blind.
Right. Oh yeah.
With the guy and his dog.
Yeah,
and
I think it's called Wish You Were Here. For some reason on IMDb, so.
Oh, okay. I'm just looking at the wiki page. Yeah.
Okay. Whatever.
Maybe it is. No. Wish You Were Here is the one before. That's the one with the monkey's paw business.
This is the one
after that.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, my bad. I forgot about the monkey's paw one. That's
Yeah, no, that one's actually kind of interesting now that I think about it. It's
basically the monkey's paw.
Yeah, and it's done really well in a short amount of time. I actually kind of like that one. It's really horrible, but you know, as far as what happens, but Blind Alleys is one where it's got this guy in it that he plays
Patrick Magee.
Yeah.
The guy from Clockwork Orange. Yeah. That guy is always, not annoying to me, but like he plays like a certain kind of character that
he plays a crazo usually.
Yeah. Usually. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of it. Yeah. But he annoys me. So. So, like, him as sort of the leader of the blind group, I don't know. There's just something about the mannered way that he acts. His acting is a certain way, especially with this kind of a character. But yeah, there's just this whole business where it's just kind of like the guy can't figure out what they're doing. And I'm just like, dude, it's really obvious what they're doing, man. Come on. So that was kind of annoying, you know, like, because it just took so long to get there. I'm like, okay, yeah, not surprisingly, that's how it ended. So that's not my favorite way to go out, you know, but it, you know, it was interesting.
Right.
See, I've always liked him. He plays in a few of the Amicus movies and, yeah, but I know what you mean. He has this like he's got the frizzy hair all the time, and he's usually out of his mind or something, you know, psychological has happened to him. But
yeah, he does something about the way he speaks. I can't explain it exactly. I don't know.
And who's the actor that plays that plays the guy coming in? The main guy in that segment.
His name, well, Nigel Patrick is the guy's name.
Is it Nigel Patrick?
Yeah, he plays the major.
Yeah.
Rogers or whatever.
He's the one that comes in and basically doesn't give a shit about everyone there.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. When you set up, like, somebody that's just such an asshole, like, I'm going to fuck with blind people. You know what I mean? Like, that is just, I mean, then you're just like, okay, fucking, let's do this guy in. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't even give you, there's no room for anything anyway.
He's one of those actors I've seen, I feel like I've seen him in a lot of early stuff. I don't know, he looks familiar unless he looks like another actor. But
he does.
He's played in a lot of stuff, like in the 50s. I think that was like when his career really took off. But
cool. Well, let's go around and talk about Vault of Horror as far as our favorite segments in this one. This one, was a little more low key, I think, as you were saying. You said that right, Brad?
It was a little more laid back. I mean, it was, the segments were good, but they weren't as intense. The only one I thought that was, more intense was the Midnight Mess, mm-hmm. was the with, you know, the surprise at the end. And see, I haven't seen this in a while, and I totally forgot about that. So I was kind of surprised when that happened. I mean, as soon as the restaurant scene happens and all that's going down, I was like, oh shit, like, you know, that's what they're doing. That was awesome.
I cracked up, man. I started laughing.
Yeah, I mean, it's corny, and it's, you know, it's nothing new. But I mean, we're also talking about, we're saying nothing new, and these movies were in the 70s,
right.
So this was new at that time. It was fresh. You know, they were really trying to pull for ideas that were, you know, different and surprising. And I imagine seeing this stuff in the 70s would have, you know, knocked you on your feet. You'd be like, holy shit. You know, kind of the same thing with anthologies now. I mean, we're watching anthologies, and when the twist, or even short films, you know, it's nowadays with between, you know, the short films and anthologies, it's all about the twist.
Yeah.
If you don't have a twist, then you don't really have anything in horror, generally speaking. You know, you need that clutch. You need to pull people in. And I think a lot of these had that. It's just that we become so familiar with it, and, you know, films have borrowed things from this, and even these things might have borrowed from something else. But now watching it today, a first timer, yeah, it's not new.
Yeah.
But I think they did a fairly good job with all the anthologies that Amicus has done. I think everything that I've seen, especially Asylum, they're really, really good.
Yeah.
I've never had, but that's also with Amicus alone. Amicus has done, you know, they did from like the early 60s to late 70s. They just had all these, you know, these British horror films that came out. And I'm really, really hoping, since, you know, Scream Factory attacked these two, which, they're considered sequels, which, I mean, there's a whole slew of them. I think From Beyond the Grave is... isn't that a Warner Archive one, Brian?
I think they did pick it up. I know it's Warner owned, and I think they did end up putting it out.
Yeah.
Because it was out on a regular Warner DVD, and then maybe Warner Archive picked it up after that.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. But I'm hoping that they go back and they actually attack the Amicus stuff, because, I mean, they even they just released, not too long ago, they released Doctor and the Devils.
Yeah.
Which is Freddie Francis, who did, you know, the Tales from the Crypt movie. And, you know, he has a lot of stuff, you know, like The Creeping Flesh, Trog, The Skull, which I like quite a bit. And a lot of these have made it on DVD. But if they start attacking the Amicus stuff, which there's not much, or even some of that old British horror, I'll be very, 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 very happy.
Oh, me too.
Because, like,
love,
even...
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, even we talked about Legend of Hell House episode, like, there's something different when it comes to, and since Brian wasn't on it, I'll ask him now, with British horror films, it's a different look, it's a different feel, mostly just in cinematography. The camera is always moving. It's just never on a tripod sitting there filming people. They're always trying to do new and creative things. The shots are always great. Are you a big British horror fan, Brian?
Yeah, I like, you know, some of their stuff. It's definitely a thing that I appreciate more than I like love. But I do see what you're saying, and there was a craftsmanship to, you know, the Asylum stuff, the Hammer stuff, that, you know, there's a reason why a lot of people, you know, continue to love and watch and, you know, recommend those movies. They're just well made, and the cast, the actors, like, you know, guys like Peter Cushing and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty fantastic, you know. So it's no wonder that those sort of hold up. Dr. Terror's House of Horrors is definitely one I'd love to see get a Blu-ray release. That's one I haven't seen in a long time, but I remember liking.
Yeah,
I really dig these older horror movies. You know, I'm looking through Freddie Francis's all his movies he's done here. It's interesting because it looks like he settled into more cinematography after he, you know, later on in his career. But I mean, the thing about these, you know, like the Amicus movies and Hammer and all these, is I think like they couldn't, you know, they didn't have huge effects budgets and stuff like that. They just had some really fantastic locations and, you know, some great actors. So they, you know, whatever they couldn't do in shock value, they basically made up for it in like a good, interesting story and great acting. And they really, you know, cinematography always, you know, seems to be really good on these films. So I think that's why I like revisiting them, and I kind of discovered these types of films later. You know, after I kind of got sick of watching another slasher or whatever, I was like, what else is out there that in horror that I haven't dug into? And I started kind of digging into more of the Hammer, you know, films, like those other early, like with Peter Cushing, the Frankenstein movies, yeah. And like Revenge of Frankenstein and Curse of Frankenstein, and just loved. You know, those movies like just grabbed a hold of me. I think I just fell in love with that style. So,
well, yeah, there's a certain, you know, finesse with those films, because I mean, the U.S. we have a slew of you know, decent films, but it doesn't seem like a lot of low budget stuff came out around that time from them, or, you know, budget constraint movies, because it seemed like there was more of a group effort than, you know, guerrilla style filmmaking with three people, you know, behind someone's house filming a movie. You don't see that. And a lot of that, you see that from filmmakers and you know, they went other routes. Instead of making quality films, they wanted to focus more on gore, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of gore films that are out that time that people still like, but there's no, like, they don't look good. There's nothing to the movie to make it timeless. The filmmakers are timeless, but their films are kind of forgettable in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't see it a lot with the Amicus stuff and Hammer and a lot of the British horror films.
Brian, what were some of your favorites from Vault of Horror?
From Vault of Horror, yeah. I gotta admit, I didn't care for that one as much. I just found it a little bit more bland. But you're right, Brad. I'm sure at the time it was not at all that, you know. Yeah, probably Midnight Mass, maybe. Yeah, I'm trying to think here. Let's see.
I thought the Drawn and Quartered one was decent. And I have
Oh yeah, no, that one is good. You're right. That one's maybe my favorite, I think.
Now let me ask you a question. Because I totally got this vibe through and through on that one. How much does that remind you of kind of like, I mean, it's not an homage because it, you know, came out after, but maybe inspiration for Fulci was Zombie. How much does that remind you of Zombie? Just like between the island, the music, the voodoo, and just how the cinematography works. It felt like Fulci watched this and was inspired by that to make Zombie. That's what I felt like. The whole time I was watching it, I felt like I was watching Zombie.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
I hadn't thought of that at all, but now that you mention it, it totally.
And there's that eye gouging thing when he takes like that, slowly takes that sharp point and pushes it through the eye.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just looking too much into it. But there's different things throughout where I was like, it just kept hitting me. And I was like, man, like, this feels like some kind of like Italian thing with the music. And then, you know, all that, like, just like I said, this setting. And then, you know, they had the guy with the beard and the frizzy hair. And that reminded me a little bit of not Ian McKellen, because that's Gandalf. Who's the other? Who's the fuck? Never mind. Who's the guy in Zombie?
Oh, I can't remember that actor's name.
I can't remember his name either. But yeah,
I just now realized that's Tom Baker, and I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, but I was like, why the fuck do I know this guy? And then I'm now just seeing that, I'm like, holy shit, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
and that makes it stand out a little bit more for some reason in my head.
I think that one was one of my favorite ones, and that's the one where the painter basically gets the power to whatever he draws. If he draws a portrait, whatever he draws on the portrait will come true.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that whole voodoo factor is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The pictures become like voodoo items. So if he tears them or hurts them, the person is hurt. It's great.
I mean, how many times have you guys, let's be honest, you know, I used to paint and stuff like that and draw. I mean, you know, people piss you off.
Yeah, wouldn't that be paint? You would paint.
No, but wouldn't that be awesome if you could paint a portrait and mess with that person? I mean, right?
I like how he's diverting from that. So you used to paint?
Yes.
That's awesome. No, I'm not that motivated. I would have drawn a stick figure or something. You know?
I used to be huge into art. So that's awesome, dude. This one kind of had a special place. I was like, you know.
I want to see your paintings.
It was all back in high school, man. High school and college. And I have no idea where the hell they are.
You need to find them.
I did do a chalk drawing of Marilyn Monroe. That's pretty awesome. But
started like a Kickstarter to resurrect your painting.
Well, yeah. Once my kids are older and I'm less insane, I can take all this insanity that's building up inside of me and put it on a canvas. Awesome.
Yeah, I think insanity would probably be better when you paint.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure, man.
The other one that I really liked on this, and I think just because, you know, I kind of in college and you know, after college, you kind of always have roommates. And was it The Neat Job, where this older guy remarries kind of a young trophy wife? And he's like obsessively compulsively neat.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it reminded me of a roommate I had back after college, and he was like, he was that guy, you know. It was horrible.
Well, you know, actually, I take that back, because that's the one segment because I watched these with Willow.
Okay.
Oh boy, the ending of that one.
Yeah, and she like, I'm watching it, and then like they start going through the jars, and I'm like, oh my god,
it's pretty dark.
Yeah, that's pretty dark, especially because it's the chick from Mary Poppins on top of it.
Yeah,
yeah. And I was like, "Well, holy crap! Like this is some serial killer shit. Like it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah,
because it, like I said, like just the feel and how it starts and some of the other ones, they're very very laid back. But this one, man, it just hits you like right towards the end. It was like, where the fuck is this coming from?
Oh man,
I think they tried to build it up like he is really driving her nuts, obviously.
Yeah,
but yeah, they don't quite sell that.
Yeah, because that's totally why it comes out of nowhere, because you don't expect it. But I guess that's the fun in it.
This is funny because I watched this one first, so it's weird because I know it's the follow up. Basically, Tales from the Crypt.
Oh,
I know what
you watched Vault of Horror first?
I did. So that kind of fucked me up, I think, because I was like, because now in talking about that one, I like that story more and Drawn and Quartered more than I remembered. Hmm. So that's interesting.
Yeah. So
cool. I mean, I'm so glad these are on Blu-ray, and
they look good too.
Yeah,
which I was surprised. But it looks like towards the end, I think they got the prints from, you know, some film archive. So they definitely had probably like 2K scans of this.
Yeah. Well, Tales from the Crypt is the better looking of the two. Vault of Horror is a bit rough in spots, but it gets better. Like, it starts out super rough. Like, it started playing, and I was like, oh my god, this is gonna be bad, because it was just grimy, just like a layer of dirt as it's kind of pushing in on the cityscape, you know, on the buildings.
I'm high maintenance Sean over here.
Hey, you know, it looked bad, but then it got better. But apparently the story with Vault of Horror is, I mean, it got a DVD release, right? But they were able to locate the uncut version. So is this the first time the uncut version has been on home video?
I don't think so, because do you remember there was like some DVD-Rs that came back that were out in the day? Brian, do you remember that, like, they released like Slaughterhouse and shit like that? It had a bunch of skulls at the top, and they were bootlegs.
Oh, man, other than bootlegs.
They were very, very – well, you just ask me. No, but these were, like, available bootlegs that you could buy online.
Oh, okay.
Like, they weren't, like – I don't know what you would – like, because, I mean, there's a lot of filmmakers and a lot of companies that release BDRs DVD-Rs because the film's lost. Maybe that's what happened at that time. I don't know. But I want to say that it was uncut, but, like, a first – official release, Sean, I will agree with you.
Yeah. Here's what I wanted to get to. I think this was one of their titles that got delayed because they couldn't find some of the uncut footage from Vault of Horror. So maybe I'm assuming they couldn't find the film
maybe
elements.
The original print, yeah.
Right, right. So this got delayed so they can do that, which you know Scream Factory got a lot of shit, you know, this year, and it's, you know, it's
we
been
give
off
them
and
a
on.
Lot of shit. What are you talking
we
about?
Do. I mean, but this was something where I'm glad that they delayed it, you know what I mean? Because this is something where they cared enough about it, you know, to really say, you know, we're not going to release, you know, just the theatricals. For a while, we're like, oh, shit, are they just going to do the theatrical? And kind of the uncut version was kind of the holy grail for everyone wanting this on Blu-ray, because that was what everyone knew it existed, probably, you know, because of those bootlegs. But you know, that was cool to see that they did that. And it delayed it 2 months, but
here's a quick sorry.
Yeah, no, go for it.
Well, there's a thing on the wiki page that says DVD release together with Tales from the Crypt, The Vault of Horror was released on a Midnight Movies double feature. Yeah. I think we all remember that. But it said in September 2007, the version used is the edited 1974 right. U.S. theatrical, which replaced some of the gorier scenes with still images, notably the final shot of Midnight Mess. I don't want to give away the shots. People can go look this up, but so Midnight Mess and Neat Job, I think, both had some stuff that was cut that is clearly restored here. So that's cool.
That's great, and they include like three versions of Vault of Horror. Like there's a whole separate Blu-ray that has the theatrical cut, which is great to have, I guess, if you want. And then it also has the open matte uncut version. So it's a 4x3 or whatever you want to say it, 1.33.1. I don't know. I'm not technical with this crap, but it has the open matte version. What's the difference? I mean, who would want to see the open matte version? Because I'm used to everything, and you know, I like, you know.
Well, certain people. It's the same reason why people watch VHS.
Well, the open matte is the. I mean, open matte. It's the full. You see everything. It's just for the when they. I think a lot of things are filmed open matte, and then they trim it down to 16:9 in the editing.
Yeah, but I'm saying that sometimes when films are released on VHS, that's what they look like.
Yeah.
It was the original presentation, and that's the reason why a lot of people watch those films is because that's originally how they looked.
Okay.
Even if it is kind of wonky or goofy, they still like it because that brings them back. And I get that. It's the same thing as why they put, you know, the theatrical version on things, because that's what people knew. That's what people like. You know, you look at more or less the uncut, unedited, whatever, more as like special features like we did on DVDs. Like, here's the deleted scenes. Nowadays, they're putting those into the movies, which is cool. I like that better. But I like also the two separate versions. The same thing with, you know, like Terminator 2. There's like all those deleted scenes I actually like, but I'm glad they put them into the movie. But I also like sometimes watching the original. I don't know. Yeah. It's just a way that I operate, I guess. It's just whatever I'm feeling. And I know other people are like that too, because that's the reason why we have these different versions.
Well, then that's what I'm getting to. I think that it's for fans of Vault of Horror, I think it's fantastic. You know, they have there's three versions, and so whatever version's your favorite, you can watch, you know, in high definition. You know, they didn't it's not like they just threw the extra versions on like a DVD, you know what I mean, at low quality, whatever. This is this is great. Unfortunately, there's no other special features on this release.
No.
Which I was kind of hoping they would, but looks like the double features now, they're kind of leaving them pretty bare bones.
Well, I mean, also these movies are a little older, and a lot of these people aren't around, you know. So, I mean, what are you gonna?
I don't know.
They pull old commentaries from the grave.
I mean, it'd be like film scholar or, you know,
yeah, I guess
or,
it'd be something
you
like
know,
that.
No, which would be fine.
Yeah, you'd have film historians or something. Because, like, on the Kino release of The Devil's Kiss, they actually have an interview, and I think it's maybe a commentary with a film historian that's pretty interesting.
I think those are cool.
But, I mean, I mean, you put that on there, but seriously, how many people are going to listen to it? I don't know. I've never heard people wanting that.
Film like, nerds like me.
Well, yeah, but you know, yep. you can't get any special features. Get a film historian. Well, okay, it's not going to happen. I mean, even that a lot of the stuff's in the archives. They don't have no stills. Nothing was used at that time.
Yeah. It's great. I'm happy enough to have them.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's just kind of a toss up as to whether, you know, obviously the extras are nice to have, but with movies like this, sometimes I think a lower price point is better because then maybe you get some people venture out into trying them when they wouldn't, you know, even knowing, oh, I'm paying a little more to get extras, but I've never seen this movie, so what do I give a shit about extras? What if the movie sucks, you know? So that's just, but it's a tough call, because obviously you and I, all us geeks, would love to have extras on something like this. A commentary, you know, a film scholar commentary, whatever. But yeah, it's with something like this, sometimes I'm torn. You know, the low price point is definitely the thing that might get some, you know, younger horror fans into some older shit, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a big factor in this is, you know, resurrecting it so people have it, you know.
Yeah.
And people can discover it.
Which is one of the great things about Scream Factory is that they're still, and hopefully they'll continue to put out stuff like this, you know, cuz they obviously have like a taste making factor that, you know, is a little bit more questionable these days, but it's certainly a lot of people collect their stuff, and you know, I'd love to see a lot more people check out older British horror or whatever else they can turn people onto.
Oh no, yeah, Brian,
I just wish they could get their stuff in Walmart.
Yeah. Oh, I know you're not saying that, Sean. I'm just like, that's something that I was thinking about.
No, I'm stoked for Supernova, guys. I don't know about you guys. I just cannot wait to watch some Supernova in HD. I'm being sarcastic.
But I would love if they actually got their product, because I mean, some of the more contemporary releases are released at Walmart and other places, but I mean, some of their older films, they're not making it on the shelves.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And
totally.
even like Best Buy, I mean, Best like Buy, Sean, you said anything. Yeah, they don't hardly like carry anything. So we're like losing out because we're having so much of this indie stuff that's popular and, you know, mainstream horror. But I would hope and want that, you know, people are releasing this, you know, a new generation gets to discover it and gets excited, because I mean, it's hard, number one, to find them on VHS. Number two, they probably don't have a VCR. And three, the VHS probably costs too much, so why do they want to pay it?
Yeah.
So it's cool when companies like this are releasing stuff. We just, you know, I just wish it got out there more.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So cool. I think that's.
I think it's a set worth picking up.
Yeah. Sure. No, it's like right now it's like $14.99.
Yeah. No brainer. No. Pick that
two
up.
Two movies. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Jesus. And they're worth it too. Like, I mean, I love anthology flicks, and you know, if there's up till now, they've been kind of hard to come by on home video. I mean, there's a couple on Netflix streaming, but as someone who likes these movies, you know, and you know, it's great to add to the collection.
Yeah,
yeah,
I would
I
say
said Amicus has seven of them, I think, and it'd be nice to have them all out there.
That'd be great. Hopefully, Scream Factory. Once they're done releasing all the Animal Go Wild movies, you know, the features, they'll go back into some anthology.
Hey, man, I love that stuff.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm psyched.
Man, next year, if you're a fan
Fox.
Of if you're a fan of Animals Go Crazy, wow, we got some double features for you next year.
Those are going to be fun shows.
I'm pre-ordering all those for sure. All right, fellas, let's jump into the sci-fi Christmas opus that is Trancers.
I'm Jack Death. I'm a trooper in the 23rd century.
Jack Death, Angel City PD. May I see your stats?
What did I do?
Under Section 7 of the Penal Code, the Council authorized me to administer you a transfer suspect examination.
You can't give me a TSE without a warrant.
I got your warrant right here, pal.
Okay. I don't want any trouble.
Hold on to
my job is hunting Trancers.
I got nothing to hide.
Finding them.
Negative.
And singeing them.
Look out!
Of course, sometimes they find me first. Then it's a little more complicated.
We monitored a line disruption in Los Angeles, December 1985. Van Zandt, Ash, and I all had ancestors in the city then.
If you think I'm bringing that scum up the line, you got the wrong trooper.
Unless you stop Whistler, everything the Council has accomplished for the last 40 years will count for nothing.
Okay, let's say I believe this. You're a cop from the future, and you're chasing this guy Piper.
Whistler.
Why doesn't he just turn you into one of these zombies? Or me?
Trancing only works on squids, people with weak minds, easily controlled. Lena, I'm from another time, another world. I don't even know what you people eat for lunch.
Jack Death is back. And he's never even been here before. Trancers.
Trancers, yay.
This is a 1985 flick directed by Charles Band of Full Moon. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of hit or miss on him. And I think recently he's made more enemies than fans. But
like hit or miss of his movies or his shystiness?
Both. I think both. But I think there's been, what, six Trancers movies?
Six.
Holy Lord. Yes. That's a lot of Jack Death. And we're talking about the first one, and this is the only one that I've seen. It's starring Tim Thomerson as Jack Death. Is it Jack Death? Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
And Helen Hunt, guys. Wow, I'd always heard of Trancers. I'd always seen like the DVD set, you know, and goofy sci-fi is right up my alley. But I'd never seen it.
Well, you got that.
But when I saw Helen Hunt was in this, that was kind of what pushed me over the edge too. Once the Blu-ray came out, I was like, man, I got to grab this because I don't think I've ever seen this movie, and I didn't realize Helen Hunt was in it, and she is super
Helen
young.
Helen Hunt's in the first three.
I know. That's the only reason why I have any interest in Trancers 2 or 3.
But, I know the big one is 4. I know a lot of people that like 4.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I want to sit through six Trancers movies, guys, but the plot on this one is the police trooper, Jack Death, who in the beginning segment is awesome. I want to see, that's the thing, I want to see a full movie of him in the future as this character. But it's the year 2247, and they're hunting down some guy who basically turns people into zombies called...
Some guy.
Trancers. Michael Stefani.
Whistler.
Whistler.
Martin Whistler.
And basically, Jack Death has to go back in time, assuming the identity of an ancestor, because that's the only way you can time travel, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. And so he becomes a L.A. police detective to track down Whistler. So hijinks ensues, as they say. Helen Hunt plays a punk rock girl. And
punk rock being that she has like a little bit of blue hair.
Yeah, I'm like, she's not punk rock, guys.
And they go to a punk rock club. That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't quite sell it as the punk rock girl, but that's okay because she's really cute in 1984.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So guys, Trancers, Brad.
Well,
I know this is your favorite movie you've seen so far this year. Other than the Danny Glover first person mummy movie.
Yeah, that's really good too. Well, Trancers, I'm not a big on sci-fi, and I'm also not that big on Full Moon stuff, and I'm not that big on Charles Band.
Oh shit, we're
Well, no, I mean the movie's not terrible. It's just it's very discombobulated. It feels that there's a few different directors on set at times, because we open up with like this Blade Runner-esque, you know, world, which is the future, which is like in, you know, 22 whatever, 50 or whatever the hell it is. Were you going to correct
2247.
Yeah. All right, so 2247. It has this like really suave like film noir look, and you know, Jack Death is super badass. He's got the cigarette, he goes in a diner, he asks for coffee, and she's like, "Oh, that's, you know, going to cost you." And it's like, "Why the fuck does coffee cost so much?" But then it jumps back and it goes into 1985. And it kind of like, I understand why they would leave it because that's the world, but just the film making aspect, even when they leave that and they go into like the lab where they're, you know, transferring him.
Right. It's very just, low budget.
It's just not, it takes that feel. It's like they had $1 million and they put it in that set in the beginning and then they filmed the rest on pocket change.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. And I don't know, it kind of took me out of the movie. Also the fact that this movie's called Trancers, but we totally forget that there's Trancers existing and Trancers actually happen because there's maybe three through the movie. Like, it doesn't, like, that aspect of the film doesn't keep up. Like, we more focus on the relationship between Jack Death and Lena, Helen Hunt's character, and him actually trying to go to Whistler. And there's just a few other things, like the whole the time watch that's 10 seconds, but it turns out to be like 10 minutes. Like, there's just so many stupid little things that happen in the movie that take me out of it. And if you like the corniness of it, that's fine. I think if I watched this and I liked it as a kid, I would probably be more forgiving. But at this day and age, I saw like Trancers 1 through I think I seen 1, 2, and 3 back when I was little. When they were coming out on video, I rented them or whatever. So I guess I was more forgiving at that time, but they didn't grab me at that point. So I kind of just threw them to the wayside. And now that they're being released on Blu-ray, and I remember it being taking the time of Christmas, I'm like, hey, let's do this. And it was a mistake. but I don't know. There's in the whole one thing that really bothered me, and I actually watched this with Janice, and Janice picked it up right away, is that whenever Art LaFour's character, McNulty, comes back as a little girl, and she's like, I had to sneak through my parents.
Right.
Well, bitch, if your parents are alive, why didn't you do the ancestral line there? Why are you getting a fucking kid? It doesn't make any sense. And Janice like looks over and she whispers, she's like, that doesn't make any sense. Why didn't he just pick the dad? And I was like, I don't know, because it's fucking Charles Band and thought it was a good idea with these writers or whatever.
Maybe it's kind of random. Maybe they don't know who they're gonna.
No, they end do. Up in. They do.
I don't know. I'm trying to fill the plot holes, Brad.
Well, I don't know. It would make more sense that a male would transfer into male than a male transfer into a little girl. It seems a little weird.
Yeah, you know, it's an opportunity for a funny little gag. You know what I mean? Ha ha.
It's not funny.
I thought it was.
But all in all, I mean, I think Trancers does have a huge fan base for what it was. And I mean, it was a huge success later on with Charles Band and Full Moon. And was one of the movies that probably really, really funded a slew of, I don't know if that's a good thing because Full Moon's put out some shit, but it really kickstarted, you know, through Empire Pictures, then which later, you know, he created Full Moon and I guess he changed it or something. He still calls it Full Moon, but it's like on the books, it's something else I've heard. I don't know. He's just a shiesty guy. And that's another thing that kind of, I guess, ruins the movie a little bit for me is just the sleaziness from him. And then they had that fucking trailer for Trophy Heads on the beginning of the movie. Like, his, like, comeback to horror, and it's, like, all, like, the famous... did you see that, Brian?
I
did not.
I fast-forward to all the trailers. I don't pay attention.
Well, I was going to, and then, like, I noticed, you know, Linnea Quigley was in it, Brink Stevens, and I was like, oh, what the hell is this? But it looks like it's all filmed on a black backdrop. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And it just like keeps on doing with the old, and it's like an obsessed fan that kidnaps former scream queens and kills them, which is kind of a cool idea in a way, but it looks like it was filmed with pocket change again. From Charles Band.
Yeah, whatever. Brian, what are your thoughts on Trancers?
I just totally threw away my whole review.
Yep.
I don't have as many problems with it as Brad, but it's certainly got, I can't deny that it has problems.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'm not like Brad, I'm not a big Full Moon guy. Like they're a notch above Trauma for me, you know, like And I don't
exactly,
mean
to, yeah.
You know, like I enjoy some of their stuff.
They're
and to
pretty
be
damn
fair,
close.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely dislike trauma movies more than Full Moon, but this one is for me one of the best Full Moon movies, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to give it like huge praise, but I like the ambition of it. But Brad is right; it's hard to it's hard to stick with it sometimes because of the whole budget thing. But I think if you can get yourself in the right frame of mind, it's pretty fun. I think
Jack Daniels will help.
Yeah, no, definitely booze helps for sure. Yeah, it's, but you know, I mean, it's like I said, it's actually an interesting idea. You yeah. know, I mean, it's maybe overly ambitious for something that's shot on this budget level, and that is,
which I can respect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's problematic to have such an ambitious idea, and then have some silly things in it, you know. But like, I like this one. I am a pretty big sci-fi fan, so I, you know, time travel stuff is kind of a like real go-to for me. So I'll watch, you know, most time travel stuff. I love time bounce movies. I love all that stuff. So this is kind of, you know, I mean, there's definitely a Terminator-y element to it, a quantum leap-y thing. I don't know, but there's some cool things. I like his gun. You know, I like the
looks
sound.
Like his butt at the dollar store.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looks like shit, but I swear they're stealing the sound from Star Wars for the actual gun, but I could be wrong.
Oh, probably.
But it sounds like a blaster from Star Wars or something. But you know, I like Tim Thomerson. I think he's sort of an actor that, like, you know, I don't know which movie I'm thinking of, but he's played a dad in a bunch of movies that I kind of had a fondness for. So it's interesting to see him as like this sort of tough guy, sort of fish out of water, you know, dude. I don't know. This one, like I said, it's not one that I run to a lot, and I haven't seen 2, 3, and now I'm curious about 4. But I do remember that all of them were big renters at the video store where I worked in the late
1990s. Huge video success.
Yeah, especially 2 and 3, which had some pretty shitty video covers.
Oh yeah, 2 is horrible.
So how I was like, why are people renting this?
But that's Full Moon though. I mean, that's how all their stuff looks.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
All their covers look awful.
But clearly, it was a thing. I remember where I was just like, they got rented so much. I was like, what the fuck is up with these Transfers movies? Actually, you know what? Full Moon was really popular at my video store in general, and I'm sure this was the case all over the country, but like the Bloodstone subspecies movies, those got rented all the time. I remember that, and I was just kind of like, who is renting these and why? And I still haven't seen those, and so I should really check them out. I've actually heard the second subspecies movies is supposed to be good, so.
Yeah, just don't watch the first one.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, I have a slight affection for it because I'm a sucker for certain kinds of sci-fi. And I'm also a sucker for young Helen Hunt, I gotta say.
I mean, she's gorgeous.
You know, I love her in, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, obviously, but then, like, she did a whole bunch of stuff, like, what is that fucking drug movie that she did? Desperate Lives is really good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There's a couple other Helen Hunt 80s movies. Quarterback Princess, I even like, you know. So I'm a sucker for that stuff. So you know, I'm not necessarily the best judge objectively, but I think it's okay. You know, personally.
With this film, I mean, like, a lot of things work. And they work really, really well, and that's mostly the from Tim Thomerson. He is so charismatic; you just love him instantly as soon as he opens his mouth. And you know, he's a good actor, and he plays that role perfectly. And throwing Helen Hunt in the mix is just another plus. And that's what keeps the movie going. And I solely believe that's the reason why the franchise kept going is because of Tim Thomerson and Helen Hunt, because they work well together. And it was just a good pairing, and the chemistry between them was even them just waking up. And that whole bedroom scene when he's slicking back his hair, and it's all perfect. like all that stuff really works. And I enjoy the, you know, the connection between the two and the conversations that they have. It's just everything that's surrounding those two actors that I think this movie falls and fails on different levels.
Well, well, yeah, I can hear all the, you know, excuse me.
Wow.
Let me make a note. I think
you need a timeout. Jesus.
I can see all the, you know, see all the problems the movie has, you know, but I'm like Brian, I'm a sucker for sci-fi, but I'm also like, I can really enjoy bad movies. And this has like a promising setup. And that's the thing with Full Moon. I think that they have good ideas. It's just the execution. the execution, you know, like the plot for Transfers is awesome. The subspecies, like Brian mentioned, is a great setup. You know, that kind of take on a vampire.
Yeah, Dollman. Dollman's like up there.
That's another one I haven't seen yet, dude. I totally want to see that and the Puppet Master movies. I'm out of it.
Even Puppet Master, like great setup, fun setup. But you know, yeah,
Puppet Master doesn't get good until like 3.
Yeah, there's some scene. I dig some parts of the first one, but
the dolls are cool. That's the only thing that's actually in like the way they kill people and their like little, you know, attributes and shit like that. That's fun. Right.
And that perfectly describes for me a Full Moon movie is, you know, there's some great aspects, but there's also wrapped around it are some pretty, you know, pretty crappy ones. But for this one, for Trancers, you know, the opening scene grabbed me, and yeah, I wish, you know, I would love to see a full movie of just in that future, you know.
It's not in the budget.
Well, I know. It would be amazing because he is so great. It's this sci-fi noir, and he's such a badass. And you're right. Like, once he opens his mouth, you're like, I'm going to follow this guy wherever because this guy's awesome. And then he goes back in time and ends up in one of his ancestors, which is kind of a weird thing. Like, where does the ancestor go? Did they mention that? Like, the ancestor is just gone?
It doesn't matter.
I don't know. Anyway, it's
not like you're right. There's a few aspects of the film that are well thought out that work, but the majority of it is just, you know, like, let's not worry about that because we'll have to add another 10 minutes to the movie because so, we want to keep this at 70. Like, it's only an hour and 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like,
so, yeah. So his ancestors lost in the ether, gone. And, you know, he comes, it's Christmas time. And, so he's with this quote unquote punk rock girl who thinks it's, and she thinks it's weird that he starts acting all like badass and stuff like that. And like putting, you know, grease in his hair and slicking it back and everything. And,
his hair looks good though.
It looks awesome. And then, you know, then one of the first transfers we see from then is, you know, is a Santa, you know, in the mall. And like that scene's awesome. You know, you got a basically zombie Santa and that he needs to dispatch. And, you know, all the way around, like I think the Christmas setting really adds to it because he gets his first Christmas present. And it's kind of a fun little like moment, you know, where he gets his first present, you know, I don't know. And whenever he's driving a car, did you guys notice that? Whenever he's driving a car, like, he is moving the steering wheel so much that in real life, he would be doing rollovers, you know? And hitting cars into the lane. Did you guys notice that?
I didn't.
Did it? Oh, my gosh, man.
I remember something like that.
I think you need to look on YouTube, Jack Death Driving. And, and it is fantastic because he's... You know, like when you're a kid, you're playing driving, and you haven't driven a car before, so you don't know. So you're just moving the steering wheel,
playing
back and
driving. Sorry, I've never played driving.
You know, when you play as a kid, you never played. That's right. You played Serial Killer as a kid. That's right. You didn't play normal games. But
the killers are coming. The killers are coming.
But you know,
the killers are coming.
Anyway, it's just hilarious. It's just some of these choices are hilarious. Like they're obviously horrible. Like who directed him to steer the car like that? You know what I mean? Like
Charles Band.
Any normal director would be like, hey, you know what? You're doing great. Just tone down the steering wheel. But it's like they did that scene and he's just talking and driving, and he's totally looking at Helen Hunt the whole time and steering everywhere, like not looking at the road. And, you know, they got it. Cut, print, let's move on to the next scene, you know? And like,
that's
it seems
because
like
Charles
that.
Band's too busy probably like on the phone talking to other people about the other 20 movies that he's producing and wants to direct at that time.
Probably.
Because it's just how he is. There's no, like, you have, like you said, there's a good idea. There's some really cool stuff in the movie, but it just doesn't work. It's just a waste. That's all it is. It's just a big waste.
I don't think it's a waste. I think it's some good fun. But, you know, if you like these kind of movies, I think there's a lot of fun to be had if you're in the right frame of mind, if you have the right friends with you, and if you have the right alcohol. I think there's a lot to enjoy.
So basically, get drunk to enjoy a movie.
Yes, yes. When you're watching,
then that means the movie's not good.
I'm not saying the movie's good. And my wife and I get these arguments all the time. I'll be watching a movie and I'll be like, "Oh man, this movie's horrible." And she's like, "Well, why are you watching it?" And I'm like, "Because it's hilarious." You know, I mean. You know, there's certain movies you need to just have fun with it. And I think, like, you can kind of see, like, when Transfer started, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be awesome." And then I saw where it was going, and then I kind of sit back, make myself another drink, and I'm like, "All right, I see where they're going here. It's not going to be. They're pretty much done with the most awesome part of the movie. Let me just see where this goes from here." And you know, Helen Hunt carries it. She's legitimately good. I'm having a brain. Tim Thomerson is fantastic, and I don't even remember. I don't even remember the villain. You know, whatever. Was it Michael Stefani?
Yeah, I don't know. Plays who Whistler. That is, though.
But you know, I think it's fun. If you like these kinds of movies, I think it's fun, and I would definitely like. I was telling you, Brad, when we were texting, I was like, "There's no way I paid $20 for this, but I wouldn't recommend paying $20 for any transfer.
$20
I think, man, maybe I got down to $14.99, but...
I mean, they had a sale for $10. That's when I picked it up.
Oh, no, that's when I got it. Never mind. It was $20 before that.
Yeah, Full Moon movies don't cost much because they don't really do too much to them.
Yeah.
And, of course, the transfer, the video looks good. It's okay. The audio that really sucks. As I had my surround sound, like, on 60 just so I could hear this shit, and I have a pretty good sound system. Like, you just couldn't really hear anything. And it's like everything was very, very low.
Yeah.
Not that you couldn't hear anything. It's just everything was really, really low. So, like, you know, when they would talk, you'd have to turn it up, and then a gunshot would happen, and you'd have to turn it down. And it was just very uneven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with Full Moon movies, I'm not expecting anything glorious. I'm expecting, you know, like I said, like, these aren't. Full Moon movies aren't full price movies. You know, you get them when they're on sale. Like, I got the Puppet Master series for, like, I think $15 for the first three movies for $15, which is about right. Transfers, $10 sounds about right. Transfers 2 right now is $25. No, do not pay $25 for Transfers 2.
You haven't even seen it. What if it's good?
You
just gave a review on a movie you haven't seen.
But I've seen the first one, and it's hilarious garbage.
Oh, so you saw the first one.
I like the first one. Don't be a jerk. What I'm saying is, Full Moon movies, you know, if you want to take a chance and spend $25, great. For me, I haven't seen Transfers 2. I'm not going to spend $25 on a movie I haven't seen.
That's because it was they snuck it in there, and like no one knew it was
they
released.
They totally did. It just appeared on
Amazon. And that's
Amazon
what happens.
They
don't announce anything. It just happens, and you're like, "Oh, Transfers 2 is out. Is this legit?" And it's like, "Oh, it's $25, but next week I guarantee you it's going to be on sale. Full Moon $7.99,
and I will buy it."
Like, yeah, I mean, I will too, because I do want to see it. but
yeah. Anyway. That's Transfers, right? Do we have anything else we want to say on Transfers, fellas?
I have a fun little fact.
Okay.
Do you remember in like early 2000s, a song, that was, "Wherever You Will Go" or whatever? "If I could, then I would follow you wherever you will go."
No. I kind of remember that. I
it was the
vaguely...
calling.
Here, yeah.
Wait.
You got the. I hear it. I hear it. This is gonna be good.
Don't cut any of this out.
Oh, God. I was about to make an edit note.
Oh, it's got to play an ad first. So let's talk for 26 seconds.
Oh, shit. Wait till it says skip now in five
seconds.
No,
you can't. You can't. Here, let me pick something that's not. See, all this Vivo stuff, it takes forever. Like, I
technology.
Have, it says add one of five. Like, oh, what Jesus. The fuck?
You gotta watch five ads?
You gotta watch five ads just to hear a song. But I'll, here, I'll talk why this is happening.
Dear
in
God.
The early 2000s, this band came out called The Calling, and it was Wherever You Will Go. Well, the guy that's the lead singer of the band is Charles Band's son.
What?
Yeah. He was in this, like, this band was huge at the time. I mean, they only had, like, a couple albums and this terrible, terrible, terrible song. But, yeah, this is Charles Band's kid, man. So, this is The Calling, Wherever You Will Go.
Mm.
How's that sound?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're playing it from speakers. That sounds amazing. Oh, yes.
You remember that, right?
I remember this song. I did this at
That's
karaoke
Charles
quite
Band's
a bit.
Kid.
Hey, girl. Just everyone in the 2000s and late 90s sang like this.
Yeah, but it was like, it's so bizarre that he was in this band. I mean, like, Charles Band's kid, like, went on to do this. Like, fuck horror films, Dad. I'm going to be in a one-hit wonder band, so fuck you. I'm pretty sure they had more hits.
I'm going to tour with Nickelback. It's going to be awesome.
They probably did.
They probably did.
Here we go. Yeah.
I totally rocked this at karaoke back in the day.
Whenever you go.
Okay, anyway.
Like Scott Stapp, like Creed.
Right, yeah. Everyone in 2000, every band had that voice. Ridiculous.
I called it the Nickelback syndrome. It was like,
Nickelback.
Wait, Nickelback did it? You mean those idiots did it? We can do it too, guys. Let's, come on.
Ugh,
we'll get Full Moon money. Dad, make a movie real quick. Pay for our record.
All right, gentlemen. We are getting thin on time. So that was Trancers, everybody. Trancers. Here we go.
Yeah, it's definitely worth picking up if it's cheaper,
if it's
for
cheap.
Sure.
Yeah. It's seriously, it's a fun time. It's not a good movie, but if you're someone like me who likes bad movies, it's a bad movie you're gonna have a lot of fun with, in my opinion. All right, well, gentlemen, let's jump into we're gonna do our top five or ten. I tried doing five, it went to ten. Our top Blu-ray releases of 2014.
Who's going first?
I don't care.
That means Sean.
I'll go first.
Yeah. I knew it by that tone.
I will rattle these off fairly quickly, but these are basically the 10 Blu-rays that I'm really happy to have in my collection, just because most of them I couldn't even, you know, you asked me last year, like, will any of these movies be on Blu-ray? I would have told you, hell no, they're not going to go on Blu-ray. Who would put the money? Who would spend the money to put these on Blu-ray?
I would have said yes, and it would have been Screen Factory.
Right. Well, anyway, these are in no particular order. They are going down the stack that I just stacked them in. The first one, I think this is my favorite release of 2014, is Screen Factory's Nightbreed Limited Edition set. I think even if you're not a fan of Nightbreed, you have to appreciate like what Screen Factory did to get this made, to get Clive Barker's director's cut finally made and put into high definition. I think they deserve a lot of credit for releasing this. And even if you don't want the theatrical cut, I think the director's cut, just the standalone version, is good enough to get. But them bringing Nightbreed to Blu-ray is pretty fantastic, and I really like what they did with the set. And I'm not much for boxes and stuff. I can care less. Most of the time, I just want the movie. But I like that they made it in a sturdy box. Looks good on the shelf. Next
you look
up,
good on the shelf.
Yeah. Next up is Cult Epic's release of Necromantic, a movie that I thought, you know, that I wouldn't get any enjoyment out of at all. But just the fact that this is out on Blu-ray, and then now Arrow just released a sexy-looking set, I think that, you know, even if you're not a fan of the movie, I think this is one of those movies that is worth talking about if you're into, you know, cinema and cinema history. You know, just the fact that this was banned for so long and finally got an HD release, I think, is worth talking about. And for me, someone who likes to collect oddities and kind of movie history items, I think this is a great, you know, a set to have. So Necromantic, that's going to go over well at the next family Christmas party. They see that on my shelf. Anyway, next up, Shockwaves, Blue Underground's Blu-ray of Shockwaves. This is one of my favorite Nazi zombie movies of all time. Peter Cushing's in it, John Carradine. Fantastic movie, and I'm glad that it's on Blu-ray, and it looks pretty good. A lot of good extras on that. I think that they brought them over from the DVD, but I'm glad that it's here, and hopefully we'll actually do an in-depth review on this one sometime in 2015. Twilight Time's The Blob. It's sold out. You can't get it for cheap or a decent price, but them bringing The Blob to Blu-ray, 1988's The Blob, was a dream come true. It's one of my favorite horror movies, and one of my favorite remakes. So seeing it in HD was fantastic. I'm hoping this is one that they re-release, you know, next year or the year after. I have one Code Red Blu-ray on here, Neon Maniacs. And having this in my collection is a gem. I love that I own Neon Maniacs on Blu-ray. And Brad, you're responsible for turning me on to Neon Maniacs.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's awesome. Brian, have you, of course, Brian has seen Neon Maniacs.
I have. I'm a fan. I got that Blu-ray.
Someone needs to release an actual card set of the monsters that they actually, because they show a card set in the movie, and that would be great. But Neon Maniacs. Next up, Death Spa. This was one that I saw. I saw the press release for, and I knew that I would love this movie. I can't believe that it's on Blu-ray. Looks great, and MPI was the media group that released it, but Gorgon Video, they kind of came back on the scene with this Blu-ray. I was hoping I would see more announcements from them. I was hoping they were back with a vengeance, but they're kind of, you know, slowly kind of getting stuff together, I think.
Yeah, I think they're getting ready. I mean, they did Evils of the Night, which was great. So, yeah, I imagine we'll see more from them in the future.
I think so. But Death Spa is fantastic. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it, because it's a lot of fun. Mario Bava's Planet of the Vampires from Kino, and I believe they partnered with, I think Scorpion did the special features, or helped with the special features or something. But Planet of the Vampires, I saw this movie on Netflix streaming one night a few years back. It may have been longer than that. And no, it was around the time that Prometheus was coming out. And I was amazed at how, you know, you can kind of see that Ridley Scott borrowed from this movie when he was making Alien and even Prometheus, because the spacesuits and things like that are great. This is one of my favorite Bava movies. You know, blending sci-fi and horror is kind of one of my favorite subgenres. And having this on Blu-ray, I was so excited when it got announced. Next up is Scream Factory's Phantom of the Paradise. Such an offbeat musical I don't know even how to describe it, but it's a take on the Phantom of the Opera, and it's good old Brian De Palma, who is awesome, and I'm glad that finally got a Blu-ray release. And next up, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 4K scan, the 4K Blu-ray that they released. Looks great. If you're a fan of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this is the set to get. I got the 40th Anniversary Collector's Edition. My only thing that I do
like is
the way they made the packaging the same size as a DVD package.
So, oh, no.
But it's on the shelf. It towers above the other Blu-rays, and it's annoying.
You
know,
they do that so you put it to the side. No, there's certain movies that deserve to be set to the side and have their own section, and that's one of them. Because I actually have a set for bigger, because there's a lot of DVDs that do, or Blu-rays that do that.
Hey, it annoyed me when VHS did it with the big old clam shells. And it annoys me. This annoys me. I don't know. That's just me.
It's called high maintenance, Sean.
But anyway, that aside, the set is awesome. It's never looked better. It is stacked with special features. And I think it's actually a pretty decent price. So this is, I'm hoping this is the definitive release of Texas Chainsaw, because I don't think I'll be buying it again.
Yeah, I don't think they'll get any better, actually.
And finally, fellows, we talked about this movie. This is the crown of my Vinegar Syndrome collection, Raw Force. The Blu-ray is fantastic. The movie is even awesomer. Is awesomer a word? And,
nope.
And I just, the fact that this is on Blu-ray staggers my mind. But I love that it's there and it's on display for all to see. So those are my favorite releases of 2014. There's so many. Like, I think 2014 was like such a banner year for releases that
imagine what next year is going to be like.
Dude, my wallet is already hurting. So, gentlemen, I will leave it to you. Who would like to go next?
You can let Brian go.
Brian?
Okay. I'll go real quick here. I have five or six, and then I have some honorable mention sort of stuff. I'm going to start off with Messiah of Evil, Code Red. They had put out a nice DVD of this a while back, but it's wonderful to see this on Blu-ray. That's a great, great horror flick. One of the best atmospheric horror movies I can think of. I love, and we've talked about my love for Deadly Eyes, the Scream Factory release, Killer Rats, Dachshunds Dressed as Rats. I just love this movie, so that's just my stuff is maybe a little weird, but it's very personal.
That's
and
like
I,
man.
I love that. I thought the disc was actually had a few good extras, even so. That was a shocker. That was a I can't believe it's on Blu-ray kind of thing, which is awesome. Runaway Nightmare
yes.
was one that this is Vinegar Syndrome, and I'd never heard of it until they put it out. And sitting down to watch that movie. is quite an experience because it's just so bizarre and so feels like some kind of fever dream, just kind of a, you know, what the fuck is going on kind of thing. And I don't know. I just think I know that I'm going to come back to that one. And, you know, it's a really nice special edition from Vinegar Syndrome. So so that was one that I enjoyed. Phantom of the Paradise, of course, that is one of my favorite movies, and it actually got, I think the Arrow version also came out early this year.
Yeah.
They might have, so you could potentially have, and I do have you know, two great releases, both with different extras that you could pick up. I recommend both.
Cool.
The Vincent Price collection 2. I know that's a kind of a cheat, but it's a really nice set.
I almost put both of those sets together.
Yeah, I mean, they're both sets are great. But, you know, the 2 is the one I think that came out this year, and it's just got a lot of... it's a great group of movies, and, you know, lots of good extras, including, and I think we talked about it at some point, but the PBS, it's like some PBS introductions from Vincent Price himself. They're shot on video, so they don't look great, but it's from like an early 80s PBS Vincent Price marathon. So it's just him sitting there introducing, and so it sort of intros and outros to, I want to say, most of the movies on the set. And those things alone are worth the price of admission, just because it's, I don't know, he's just really great. It's really great to put you in the mood to have Vincent Price introduce his own movie. I don't know. It's good. Nice. So Final Exam is another one of those movies that I was a fan of before the Blu-ray came out. But I just getting it on Blu-ray from Scream Factory really reminded me how much I love Radish and how much I just love that movie. I don't know. It's a hard one to defend, because I guess if you don't like it, you just don't like it. But I don't know. I'm a fan. I think that's my main group. And then like some honorable mentions, Sisters, De Palma's movie from Arrow on Blu-ray. That was cool to see.
Oh, cool.
Bloody Birthday, Severin put out. That's just a fucked up kids are nuts killing people movie. I like that one. Cat People, Scream Factory. I really enjoyed the remake. I mean, not as much as the original, but there's something about it I just love. Slumber Party Massacre from Scream, also a really good slasher. And then Bad Dreams and Visiting Hours, that one of our first, I think that might have been the first show I was on with you guys. But I love Bad Dreams. Visiting Hours, I'm okay with. I don't love it all, but it's not a set breaker. But Bad Dreams is definitely the reason to get that Blu-ray. That's a great flick. Nice. So that's my favorites this year, I think.
Cool. Man, so many good so many good things. I think all our lists are going to be different for sure. Brad.
Well,
lay it on me.
Hi. I have 11.
Here we go. Okay.
Night of the Demons was a big one for me, even though this has been released on DVD. I thought the transfer and audio, it's the best job and greatest job that Screen Factory has done since, even at this day. I think it's their best work. I thought the sound was absolutely incredible. I love it. Slumber Party Massacre is on there, along with Brian. This is one of my favorite slashers of all time, other than Part 2. So, yeah, that's on there. Neon Maniacs was on there with you, Sean. Final Exam, of course, because that was always a big, big one for me. I have the VHS. I have the novelization. I have the DVD. I've been a big fan for a long time. And, yeah, Brian, you're right. It's hard to defend because it's one of those, either you like it or you don't, because there's not too many things you can pick to stand up for it, because we kind of know what we know what it is, we know where it belongs, but we're just, you know, drawn to it. All right, I think that's all the ones that repeat. My own is Severin put out Dead Kids, aka Strange Behavior. I've loved this movie since a little kid when I saw it as Strange Behavior on VHS. It's well shot. It's a beautiful movie, and it's fucking nuts. Another killer kid thing.
Good call. I almost put that on my list. Good call.
Yeah, I really, really like that one. Scorpion did House on Sorority Row, which I've always really dug. I was happy to see that on Blu-ray. Girly came out on Blu-ray this year, which I was very, very excited about. It's one of my favorite weird films from the UK. It's just super bizarre, very weird, very uncomfortable at times, but always dug it.
Brad, sorry, describe that movie for me, because I didn't pick it up because I'd never heard of it, and the cover didn't do anything for me. So tell me why I should get it.
The cover didn't do anything for me?
Yeah, it's stupid. I know that's dumb. I know that's dumb. But like I said, I don't know anything about the movie, so I want to.
Well, I thought that
I
should have put the old like cartoon cover with the girl that was in the skirt with the axe, because I mean that was like the cover that they used on theirs is the DVD cover that was released. But this is another Freddie Francis movie. So this is funny that we bring it up. The guy who directed Doctor and the Devils and stuff like that.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. One where I'm like, I should probably look at that one. I'm sorry, dude.
They kidnap hippies.
Okay.
And they make them play a game where they're like the ultimate family, and those who don't want to participate get murdered. It's very good. It's very sexualized as well, I guess, if that makes any sense, which probably doesn't. But yeah, it's like, you know, because we have Girly, who is played by Vanessa something. But yeah, she is, you know, she's cute. She's a teenager. She's very immature. And she's the one with the axe. yeah, it's a very bizarre movie, but it's just one of those that once you see it, you'll never forget it.
Cool.
It's one of the most memorable horror films that I've ever seen, and it's funny at times.
That's cool. No, I'm looking at the Scorpion site still has it.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, it's also limited edition, I believe, so you might want to pick that up as soon as you can. The Lorelei's Grasp came out. I think a German company released that. I've always been wanting that on something else other than VHS. I was very, very pleased to get that. That was an import. You can get that on Diabolik's website, I believe, which it's not like limited edition or anything, but The Lorelei's Grasp. It's also known as When the Screaming Stops, but not the other UK When the Screaming Stops movie.
Okay. I want to try to get it right so people can, if they want to find it.
It's hard to describe this, so I'm just going to read the synopsis. on IMDb. The legendary Lorelei has been living for centuries in a grotto beneath the River of Rain in Germany. Every night when the moon is full, she turns into a reptile-like creature craving for human blood. When one girl after another of a nearby boarding school is killed by her, a hunter named Sergid is engaged to kill the monster. That's the best way to put it.
Hmm.
Yeah, without giving anything away. But that movie's it's nuts, and it's very awesome that it's on Blu-ray.
Cool. It's another 1974 flick.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Very well shot. The atmosphere is amazing. It's beautiful. It's a really, really good movie. So I was happy to see that on HD, and it's actually a really, really good transfer and everything. The other one was a German release. I think it came out this year. It's hard to know when Germany releases shit because they announce it, then it seems like it's released, but it's not. But they released The Sentinel on Blu-ray, which is one of my all-time favorite horror films of all time. It's fucking nuts. I love stuff with cults and, you know, possession and shit like that, and the cast in this. I've talked about it many times. I know Ryan Turk's a big fan too. We talked about it on the show a few times. But yeah, that was released on Blu-ray. It was a limited edition of like 222. They have different versions.
Okay.
But I think altogether is only like 600 released.
God damn it.
But yeah, it's they actually, what was really cool, and even though Sean would hate it, they released old packaging like VHS, like clamshell plastic. And it's tall as fuck. It's the tallest thing
here
I
we
own.
Go.
But yeah, it was actually a really, really good transfer. The sound is okay. It's not the greatest. What it seems that some things are recorded in a box, it feels. Which another movie I'll be mentioning that was on my list is the same way. It's another German release. But I figured out, I know this is not good, it's not, I just found a loophole. There's a certain setting on my receiver with my surround sound that I can set it to where it doesn't sound like that, because when you put on the German track, it sounds great. Like, it's very bombastic, it's loud, you can hear everything. But when you turn it to the English track, everything changes. Everything like dials down. But I found a setting on my because I was messing with it, and I was like, holy shit, this actually sounds pretty good. So I have to do that, which you shouldn't have to. But it's The Sentinel on Blu-ray, so shut the fuck up. Trick or Treat, the old Trick or Treat from the 80s with Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, Gene Simmons and Ragman and Sammy Kerr. This finally made it on Blu-ray over in the UK with the soundtrack and everything. And the same company that released The Sentinel did it, NSM Records. Same thing, the video quality is great, but the sound is a little goofed up. And this one sucks a little bit more because it's all about the soundtrack with this one. But again, that setting, it changes it, and it sounds decent. And my number one, drum roll, Francers. No, Stage Fright. Michel Sauvier, his film. I love it. It's one of my favorite slashers, again, up there with like Slumber Party Massacre and Final Exam, which is really weird this year. Some of my all-time favorite slashers,
yeah, a lot of slashers this year.
Was released. All I Need Is The Mutilator and Slaughter High, and I will be fine. Then I can die a happy man. But until then, we'll have to wait. But yeah, those are my top 11.
Awesome. Dude, I can't believe I left Stage Fright off my list. I suck.
It's okay.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this year, man, so many great releases. Like, you know, Graduation Day, Prom Night. I mean, it's been, I feel like, I don't know if it's just because of the show I'm paying more attention, but I feel like this year just saw like an explosion of horror titles, you know, more than usual, I feel. What do you guys think? I mean,
yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Scream Factory did their whole summer of horror, and I feel like things ramped up a little bit this year. I think so.
Good stuff. I mean, it's a fantastic year. Like, people are talking about the box office and theatrical movies. I haven't really paid that much attention because I've been buying so many movies. My to watch list at home is ridiculous. So there's a lot of great releases that you guys mentioned too that I haven't even got around to. So I didn't leave them. I left them off my list because I haven't watched them yet.
Hey, so, Brad, real quick, the Sentinel release you're talking about, they have it at Diabolic, right? On the cover, does it say like Hexen Sabbat or something like that?
Hexen Sabbat. Yeah.
Okay.
Here, let me just.
Brian is buying a movie right now, people.
I'm looking right at now. It. It's $36.99 on Diabolik.
All right. Well, hey, we got to wrap up the show here very shortly, but I wanted to really quick go through our super deluxe people who bought the super deluxe option on our T-shirts. There's a couple of you out there that haven't got your shirts yet because there is the manufacturer, there's a delay in the sizes you guys ordered. So I'm hoping to get those in very soon. Thank you guys for being patient. No problem. I hate it when I can't get things totally sent out. There's three of you that still haven't got your shirts. One of you, I think, is on this list. Anyway, I'm going to go through this really quick. Chuck Zars, thank you so much for supporting the show. He just wanted to support the show, so he chose that option. He does a lot of on Follow Friday. He does a lot of he adds us and tweets out a lot about us. So Chuck, thank you so much. Johnny Numb, he has a horror podcast called The Last Knock over at CrashPalaceProductions.com. Check out his podcast there. Martin Leggett over at NerdyLittleSecret.com. His podcast is called It Came from the Indies, and they specialize in all things independent. So if you're a fan of independent film, definitely a website and a podcast to check out. Jeff Kanopka, DeadAirPodcast.net. He's a friend of, I've been Twitter friends with him for quite some time. He's a good guy. His podcast is Dead Air Horror and Genre Podcast. Currently, they're working their way through a Nightmare on Elm Street retrospective, and their retrospective podcasts are fun. They did a John Carpenter one where they covered all of John Carpenter's movies through like a span of a month. So good stuff from them. It's a fun show, and good guys over there at the Dead Air Podcast. And then these three, I didn't get information on websites or anything. I'm just going to name their names. David Green, thank you so much. Ricky Stevens, thank you. And then Andy Payton from Australia. So I believe he is one of where the shirt hasn't made it out yet. But thank you guys so much for grabbing those T-shirts. It means a lot, and you guys supported the show. That way we basically rolled the money over into another order, so we have a stock of shirts. The second order is on its way, so we'll have those available. Some are still available on the website over at thescreamcast.com. If you want a T-shirt, grab them there in the store area. And right now, I think we have mediums, smalls, mediums, and larges, and the other sizes are coming in soon. That's it. That's all I got.
I have breaking news.
Breaking news.
Number one, Brian, you are right. That is the one. I think that's actually the hard box, not the plastic one that I have, but same thing. That's $36.99 at Diabolik. But I was searching through Diabolik, and the same company – I knew this was happening, but I didn't know it was out yet. Same company released Stone Cold on Blu-ray.
Oh.
So that is on Diabolik as well. Awesome. It's very, 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 very pricey. But if you know anything about Joe Huff and cleanup on aisle 9 – yeah, just Stone Cold's one of my favorites.
Dude, Stone Cold's
just,
so
I
awesome.
Just quoted the shit out of it, by the way.
Oh my gosh, Stone Cold's awesome.
But anyways, yeah, it's on Blu-ray. Same thing, the media book from NSM. And it's like $43 is very pricey, but you're not getting just a plastic case. You're getting like a hardback book from these guys. Like, they do fantastic work with their – yes, it's in German, but – MGM owns Stone Cold, I believe. So
it's got to be like, coming out in the next couple of years. Somebody like Shout's got to step up.
Yeah, I mean, I know they own it,
and it has a fan base too.
Yeah, it's got a big fan base.
Yeah,
somebody will snag that.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
All right, gentlemen. Well, it's been a fantastic year. You know, I took a chance and started up this podcast in February, and
you will go.
I'm not trying to have a moment here, Brad. I'm trying to have a moment.
Sorry.
And this podcast, I think, has gone above and beyond all my expectations. It was just some little thing I was just thinking about doing on my own, and then I tweeted it out, and Brad jumped on board. And I think Brad's been a huge part of keeping the show going, bringing in guests. So I want to give credit due. Brad's a huge backbone of the podcast.
And the only reason why I survive is because Sean is killer at editing.
Whatever, man.
Me out.
Sometimes I have to make editorial choices, of course, but not often, man. And then Brian, you know, you haven't been on through the whole year, but you just bringing you on as, even if when you're not on the show, I feel like you're a part of the podcast, and you're a huge, you know, on the microphone, off the microphone, I think you're a huge force in why this podcast has done so well. So I want to give credit to Brian Sauer as well. So thanks, man.
Been my pleasure to be involved in what way I could. You guys are doing great.
And then oneofus.net, man, picking us up. So we want to thank them. It's been a great year, and a lot of, you know, nerdly.co.uk. They were the first website to start, you know, kind of listing our show and posting our show. So huge thank you to them. And Wolfman of Mars for doing the music. Thank you guys. You guys rock. Their album is mixed. Their cat got to listen to the first official pressing. So them and a cat have heard the whole album. So I'm excited to hear it. The song, the music you hear in the show is a full song on that album. So I can't wait to hear the full thing. Hopefully they give us a shout out. They better.
Maybe.
Go to Wolfman, I think it's The Wolfman of Mars, or wolfmanofmars.bandcamp.com, and grab all their albums. Good stuff with that. Fun music. And, gosh, I always feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spencer for doing the art for the show. He came up with our main logo, and then he just did a kind of branding logo the other day that I'll be using for some stuff. So, check out his stuff on Facebook. It's The Art of Kevin Spencer. So type that in and you'll find him. But great guy and great art from him. He does. You can actually hire him to do commission work as well. And then CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com. I'm working on something with them, but they've been keeping me energized through these podcasts. And then Kraken Rum for getting me drunk in the evenings when we do the evening podcast. That's it. That's all the shout-outs I got. You guys got anything?
No, just thanks for having me part of the show. And I'm glad this has been something that we start out small and we're like, whatever. And then it became huge for us. And it's a big part of our lives. And we're part of other people's lives, which is very, very cool. People come for us for source of information. Opinions on movies, what should I buy? And that means a lot to us, even though you might not, you know, think, but, you know, the first thing that pops in your head is, well, let me tweet Screamcast or let me tweet Sean or Brad or Brian and, you know, figure out if this is something worth buying. That really, really means a lot to us because that means you know, respect our opinions and value them, which is badass. So just if we reach out to that one person, this show's worth it to me. So, yeah, thank you.
Yep. Brian? Do you have anything sentimental you want to say?
No, man. I mean, yes. I mean, it's yeah, no, I mean, everything you guys have said, it's really neat to be a part of this, and I'm honored, and I hope the fan base continues to grow, and, you know, I think this kind of show that we just did, it will be a fun one for the listeners, especially with the favorites of the year, especially with what you said, Brad, about people kind of looking to the show for advice. I think between the three of us, it's a great group of discs that if people don't haven't picked that stuff up, there's a lot of interesting stuff there to be to be had. So
totally. All right, and with that, we got some. You know, I'm excited for 2015. I'm gonna try. My goal for 2015 is to get a lot
more money.
Spend more. Well, God, that's gonna happen anyway. You know, either way, but to get more reviews up on the site, I've been wanting to get reviews on the screamcast.com, but you know, I got three kids and a job, and when I get home, I don't want to sit at the computer again, so I've been slacking. But my goal for next year is to really to get a certain output per week. I'm going to set some sort of goal, so you'll start seeing a lot more things show up on the website if everything works out.
We are expanding a little bit next year with different things, so that will be coming up, and also the guests will be crazy. I'll just tell you now.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. So, all right, gentlemen. With that, have a happy new year. This is the last show of the year. We're going to take a break next week, spend time with our families, get through Christmas and into the new year. And we will have an episode for you in January, first week of January 2015. So all of you have a happy happy Christmas. A Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. Kwanzaa, all that good stuff, and a happy new year. We'll talk to all of you in 2015. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. See you guys later.
It's a good song, man. It's a good song.
All right. You will go.
All right.
Wow.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Should all the acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind? Should all the acquaintance be forgotten, days of old lang syne? Don't forget the ones you love and let's have a good time. Don't forget the ones you love and days of old lang syne. For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne. We'll take a cup of kindness, yeah, for old.